Blog Talk Radio.
After a year of tireless work, a new season has arrived for the Miami Hurricanes. It's year two of the Mario Cristobal era, and it kicks off at 7 p.m. on Friday night with a mood of anxiety coming off the disappointments of 2022. Let's be honest. It's really important that Miami look good at Hard Rock Stadium against Miami of Ohio on Friday night, a team that is just good enough to mount a challenge to the Hurricanes. It's important for the general mood around the program that is being disrespected on a nationwide level, almost an afterthought in any conversation and in the national polls. It's important for the psyche of the players, who 8 days later will line up against Texas A&M in a nationally televised game that will have far-reaching implications on recruiting and just the overall psyche of the players as they prepare to get into conference play. And it is important for the fan base that comes together tonight on the People Show, which is simply starving to see improvement from the program that it loves. Yep, tonight as we begin a new season of Cane Sport Live, we really have no idea what to expect Friday night or from this football season in general. You have two new coordinators in Shannon Dawson and Lance Guidry. You have 40 new faces on the 85-man scholarship portion of the roster. And more than anything, you have a newly formed team that has never played a single game together. The unknown. That's the theme tonight on Cane Sport Live, which is presented this evening by Sicilian Oven Restaurants with 8 locations throughout South Florida. Sicilian Oven is not your typical Italian restaurant. Hello again, everybody. I'm Gary Furman, the publisher of CaneSport.com, and we welcome you once again to a new season of Cane Sport Live. This year, I'm going to be joined in studio by our young writer, Azubi Charles, as we take your calls and discuss the various issues surrounding the Miami Hurricanes and recruiting. As always, this is your show. It'll be driven by your participation. The call-in number is 563-999-3550. That's 563-999-3550. If you call in, you hit the number 1 on your keypad. If you want to come on the show, that puts you in the queue, and we bring you on the show in the order that you land in the queue. If you're just driving around tonight and you want to call in and not participate in the show, feel free. We have more than 100 open phone lines, plenty of room for everybody to call in, listen, participate if you want. We want to hear from a lot of voices this year. We want to hear from first-time callers. We want to capture the mood of the Canes Nation, and we hope that all of you will join us throughout tonight's show and then, of course, throughout the entire season. So with that, let me start out by welcoming our young gun, Azubi Charles, to Cane Sport Live. Azubi, this is a big moment for you in the progression of your career. You are entering the asylum this evening. You are going to get to know some of the fans. You are going to get to hear their voices. You're going to get to hear what a knowledgeable fan base the Miami Hurricanes have. So, Azubi, welcome to Cane Sport Live.
Yeah, thanks for, you know, bringing me along, you know, this Tuesday evening. Really excited to kind of have a chance to really talk to the fans and get, you know, the nitty-gritty and things with, you know, kickoff, what, 3 days away now, Friday kickoff, 7 p.m. I know a lot of energy is buzzing around the Hurricane fan base. Miami of Ohio is coming in, a lot of smack talk coming, you know, from the guys up north. So just really excited to, you know, talk some Canes football with the fans and everything like that.
Well, you know, you joined Canes Sport at the beginning of the Cristobal era a year ago, and you've had a front row seat, you know, like all of us on our staff have, to all of the changes that have been taking place in the program. And I guess, you know, what I'd want to ask you is, do you agree with me that despite the close-up perch that we have to the team, that it's just really, really difficult to get our hands wrapped around this team and what kind of success that it can have this season?
Yeah, you know, from the small glimpses that we do get, one thing I will say is, you know, there has been a lot of change, obviously, with, you know, close to 40 new guys coming in and out of the doors and things like that. But one thing I can say that we saw that I really like is just the pure size and the speed that Miami's brought in through the transfer portal and through that 2023 class. I remember, you know, seeing Miami for the first time last year. That was my first chance kind of seeing, you know, a Power 5 Division I program up, you know, up close. And, you know, from first time seeing, I was like, this is pretty cool. And then you kind of see year two, and I'm just like, okay, this kind of looks like a completely different new team. You know, from up front, you got big guys like Javion Cohen and Matt Lee and Inez Cooper and Francis Malgo and Jalen Rivers. And then you see the speed on the outside with Ray Ray, Tyler Harrell, and just a bunch of other guys that they brought in on the defensive side of the ball too. So the biggest thing that I've really seen is literally the biggest thing, the size and kind of just the new bodies and a lot of bodies Miami brought in. So, you know, we can't see much with, you know, the little glimpses that we see with the stretch and things like that. But from what we can see is, you know, the physical appearance of this team look, you know, much better than last year. And that's something that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, you know, it's really kind of cool. I mean, you don't see this very often, but there's literally 40 new faces on this roster. That's almost a half of a football team. And I know Colorado's turned over like 60, 70 spots or whatever. They kind of ran everybody out of that program when Deion Sanders came in. It hasn't been quite as insane here, but not too far off, to be honest with you, when you factor in year one and two. But 40 new faces, this really is an entirely new football program, football team. And that's why it's so tough to get your hands wrapped around. And like, I know one of the things I'm being very careful about is not overselling this year. I see a football team that is faster, that is stronger, and that is better. Like there, I think that's undeniable. What that is going to mean to the bottom line as when we sit here in 3 months and evaluate the whole thing is what is really hard to figure out. You know, you got Tyler Van Dyke coming back. Hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens here as this week goes forward. Hopefully he makes it out there Friday night and can start the season the way he's worked very hard to do. But he has looked very good in training camp. He's embraced Shannon Dawson's offensive system. He's executing it very well. The receiver core, while they're not sure they have a great number one receiver, a guy that's going to be a 1,000-yard guy over the course of the season, there are a lot of very capable bodies in that room this year and a lot, you know, more weapons than what Josh Gattis had to work with, quite frankly, last year. Not making any excuses for him because he was horrendous. But, you know, they do have more firepower on the outside this year. The tight ends have been a little banged up. We'll see how that works out with Arroyo coming back off the ACL. But the running back room has been totally transformed with the injection of Mark Fletcher and Ajay Allen. And the offensive line also totally rebuilt with Matt Lee coming in, Javion Cohen coming in, the five-star freshman Francis Maiagoa starting at right tackle. This is a whole new look on the offensive line. They are bigger. They look like a major college offensive line. So that's just the offensive side of the ball that I'm really bullish about. I think that they're going to be very explosive on offense. I think they're going to score a lot of points. I am really excited about the Miami offense this year. The defense I'm a little bit more trepid about, quite frankly. You know, I got to see Leonard Taylor produce on an every down basis. There's so much riding on his shoulders to hold things down in the middle. He's a guy that has admitted in the past that he's taken off plays here or there. Leonard Taylor can't take off plays, man. Like, they need Leonard Taylor to be a big time player this year. There have been good signs in training camp, but obviously it becomes different when the lights go on starting Friday night. You know, looking like Branson Dean's going to start next to him at defensive tackle. This is a guy that was like a middle of the road defensive tackle at Purdue. Okay. We're not going to, you know, oversell it. He's done a nice job since he came here. They love his technique. They think that in this system, this defense, that he could be a productive player. But you know, we have to see it out on the field. They should have a really nice rotation at defensive end. They've got the young freshman buck, Reuben Bain, that they can bring in and spot in from time to time. He looks like he is just going to be a freakish college football player over the next, I'm going to say, 3 years, because I don't think he's going to be here for more than three. A lot of bodies at linebacker. Who's going to step up there? You know, all you need to know about linebacker is that Francisco Maiagoa came in from the transfer portal from Washington State and immediately was by far the best linebacker on the roster. So what does that mean? You know, you're going to have at least one, sometimes two other guys on the field, whether it's Corey Flagg, whether it's Wesley Bissain, whether it's Keontra Smith. You know, somebody has got to step up and produce for the defense. The cornerback position, very similar. A lot of guys there. Who is going to step up and be dudes? Like, we do not know the answer to that question as we sit here tonight. At safety, you've got Cam Kitchens, you've got James Williams. They are being touted as one of the best safety duos in the country. Azubi, I want to see them play, and I've caught a little bit of heat on the message boards for my opinion on this, but the anointment is great, but these are players that have never beaten anybody, okay? And they have had bad football seasons back to back, and I want to see this group of kids beat somebody this year and earn their stripes, so to speak. Just your thoughts on that before we go to the calls.
Yeah, no, that's why when I kind of gave my predictions and, gave previews of what I thought the season would be like, I feel like Miami needs a statement win this year with Mario Cristobal. I know last year we had the kind of complete opposite of a statement win with that blunder with Middle Tennessee State, but we're leaving that last year. But I feel like Miami's going to have a chance to get that statement win when Texas A&M comes around week two to Hard Rock Stadium, like you said, nationally televised game. A team that they lost to last year in kind of a very disappointing manner where, Miami went out to Texas and didn't have their best game and had chances but couldn't capitalize, the Tyreek fumble, just the Henry Parrish fumble, just little things here and there. But obviously, we don't like to look ahead at the schedule, but I kind of feel like, hey, this Texas A&M game, I've been saying this all throughout the summer, all throughout fall camp, I believe this Texas A&M game is the biggest game on the Miami Hurricanes schedule. Not, for ranking-wise or, things like that, not because, it's going to impact their ACC championship opportunities, anything like that. I just think this game has so many implications on the field and off the field that this is their biggest game of the season. I know a lot of people say, oh, Clemson is the biggest game, Florida State is the biggest game. In my personal opinion, I believe this Texas A&M game is going to be huge for Miami on the field to build confidence and off the field to build momentum in recruiting, because there's going to be a lot of big recruits in that recruit section come next Saturday. So I feel like, that game is going to be an early indication of how this team is going to perform throughout the season. And this can be their, time to make a statement and, kind of tell the country, hey, we're not the Miami that you saw last year. This is a new Miami with Coach Cristobal in year two, and we're ready to, make a name for ourselves, the 2023 season.
Statement games. You mentioned Texas A&M. That'll be one opportunity. I think the road trip at North Carolina, you're going to face a top-shelf quarterback in Drake May. I mean, that will certainly be an opportunity for a statement win. The road game at Florida State late in the season, that's an opportunity for a statement win. The home game against Clemson is going to be an opportunity for a statement win. So you're going to have at least four opportunities for statement wins. And I want to see these guys beat somebody, okay? And until that happens, I don't want to hear all American talk and there's not going to be Heisman talk, but I don't want to hear about individual accolades and things like that. I want to see big time performances in big time games this year, beat somebody, get yourself in the running for the ACC, just like show significant progress that we have not seen in this program for a very long time. The coaches have done as good a job as you could expect in turning over the roster, in fighting and scratching every single day to bring better players into the program, to bring more depth into the program. In year two of Cristobal, they are not all the way there yet. There are still depth issues in many places, but the front line talent is significantly better, and we could talk more about that tonight. And just in a programming note, in the 9 o'clock hour for our Sicilian Oven Point Counterpoint segment, the voice of the fan, Bruce Warner, will be joining us with a special guest tonight, former Cane defensive back, Dwayne Starks. So we have that to look forward to later tonight. But now it's going to be all about your calls. So remember the number, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the one, your keypad, if you want to come on the show. We're going to the queue. Oh, what a surprise. Azubi, get ready for this, man. This is your indoctrination into Cane Sport Live, because one of our legends on this show is number one in the queue, and that is my man, Greg. And let's get him in here. Greg, welcome back to Cane Sport Live. It's going to be so great to hear your voice.
How you doing, guys?
Doing good, man. We're ready to go, man. We're ready to go.
Yes, sir.
I enjoy Azubi's work. I think he's doing a good job.
He's a superstar.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll make it quick because I know a lot of these people on the boards complain that I stay on too long, so I'll make it quick. Okay. Mario, I wish him the best. He will never win big at Miami till he starts recruiting better quarterbacks and D tackles. His record of quarterback recruiting has been horrendous in both spots. He has to play Anthony Brown for 2 years at Oregon. He inherited Justin Herbert that won him the Rose Bowl. Okay, at Miami, do we know if either of these two guys behind Van Dyke can even play? Have you seen anything? I'm not at these scrimmages. What is your opinion on these two quarterbacks?
All right, and I'll get Azubi involved in this too. We have been able to watch them, and you know, I think you're being a little harsh, Greg. We don't know yet about Emery Williams. The early signs are extremely good. Azubi, would you agree? You watch Emery Williams out on the practice field, and you feel like you're looking at a true freshman that can potentially be the future of that position at Miami. I don't know how quickly it'll happen. Heck, it could even end up being Friday night. You know, for all we know, we'll see what happens. But you know, would you agree that Emery Williams has shown us quite a bit here in his time on campus?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you on that. You know, since he came, you know, early in the spring as an early enrollee or January, I've just always, you know, seen him, and just he's a poised guy in the pocket. He never seems to, you know, stress out or kind of let things get to the best of him. He's just always been calm, cool, and collective. He has a very nice arm for a true freshman. I was in high school, you know, 6-7 months ago. So I feel like from the early looks from Emery Williams, I feel like Miami kind of did get a, you know, diamond in the rough with this kid, you know, a three-star guy that a lot of people were kind of questioning in the class when, you know, they had Jaden Rashada, like, oh, you know, why are we taking this guy? But he's come on, he's put his head down and he's worked, and it seems like he's earned the respect of a lot of guys on the team, and I feel like that's huge for a quarterback to get that respect, to get that trust from your teammates. And I feel like Emery's kind of doing everything you want to see a true freshman do and a little bit more. When we watched him in the scrimmage, he did his thing. He was, you know, making all the right passes, making all the right reads, never threw any, you know, really, really questionable passes. So I feel like right now Emery's kind of shown everything you want to see in a freshman, and I feel like he does have very good upside for Miami in the future.
But, Greg, you know, that said, like, what you're saying is not totally – out of line. I mean, you know, looking back at Oregon, you know, I think Mario, he had to go through a couple offensive coordinators, and that always impedes your ability to recruit quarterbacks. But they did recruit a kid by the name of T.Y. Thompson, who was one of the top quarterback prospects in America that year. It turned out that he was a little slow developing, and they ended up, even after Mario left, they brought Bo Nix in from Auburn. But you know, at the time that they recruited T.Y. Thompson, he was as highly regarded as just about anybody coming out of high school. So you're right, he did inherit Justin Herbert, who he had his first couple years. But what are you supposed to do, apologize for that? I mean, you know, they had a top-tier quarterback in that moment. And, yes, they took a step back when they had to go and bring in a transfer. But Emery Williams was the guy that Frank Ponce identified. He was the quarterback's coach last year. He identified him and they were able to win the recruiting battle for Emory, and I've been incredibly impressed. Now, Ja'Kari Brown's been a little bit of a hot button. He was not really a Mario recruit. He kind of became a Mario recruit by inheritance, I guess, when Mario took the job. But this kid is, if he can, and it's hard to become a great passer. We've had this conversation with different quarterback gurus and stuff. It's like you're either a natural passer or you're not. And college is different than high school. And so you might have been a successful quarterback in high school, but having to now bring that game to the college game is different. And, you know, Ja'Kari Brown is not a natural passer, and he has had to work on it from the time that he arrived in college. And it's been a little bit of a struggle at times. He's very inconsistent. And I don't know that the test of time is going to stand up very well for him, because I think they're going to continue to bring quarterbacks into the program. I think that they've already got a kid by the name of Judd Anderson committed for next year. I think they'll be looking for another high school quarterback if they can get one after this season. I think there's a decent chance that if Tyler Van Dyke does, in fact, leave after this year, that they will go in the transfer portal and get the best quarterback that they can find to come compete with Emory and Ja'Kari in spring practice next year. So what does the future hold for Ja'Kari Brown? We don't know that right now. But, he is still inconsistent. And that's not a great thing, obviously, for a quarterback. My personal opinion has been for quite some time that he is one of the most elite athletes on this football team, without question. I feel that every season that goes by that he is not significantly impacting victory is significant. I think he has that type of ability. If he ever did get the passing side of the game down to where he is a consistent passer, I think you would have a potential Heisman Trophy winning player at quarterback. But it's hard for me, and I'll let Azubi comment on this as well before we go on to your next question, Greg. But it's hard for me to visualize that right now. I just think that the program is going to have to try to do what you're talking about in your question, Greg, and move on to try to recruit more elite level quarterbacks. And I just don't know the time is going to be on Ja'Kari's side. Azubi, am I doing a good job of describing that?
Yeah, no, I understand where you're coming from with the Ja'Kari thing. I'm thinking the same thing. You know, last year when he came in as a true freshman, you know, obviously he had his struggles a little bit with throwing, but that comes in, you know, when you're coming in from a wing to your kind of option offense that he ran in high school. So he wasn't used to, you know, throwing 20 to 30 passes a game where you know, you see that at the collegiate level. But, you know, you want to see progression in your second year quarterback. And I feel like Ja'Kari flashed, you know, a few things in the spring, and then, you know, in the scrimmage, he didn't look his best. So I feel like if he gets, you know, his mechanics down, if Dawson, you know, finds a way to use his athletic ability to the best, just use him as best as they can, I feel like that can work. But until Miami finds a way to, you know, get the best out of Ja'Kari Brown, because, you know, a lot of guys, you can't, some guys can't work in certain systems, and you see that. If Ja'Kari is not the best thrower in the world, you can't ask him to go out and throw 40 to 50 passes a game. You know, make him throw 30, have him run a little bit, show off that athletic ability, things like that. But I feel like with him, the progression kind of needs to show with his arm and other things like that. But I feel like with Emory and Ja'Kari, that's kind of a not a scary thing, but next year I feel like you do have to bring in an elite-level guy from the portal if Miami wants to continue on the upward trajectory that they want to see. Because if you lose a guy like Van Dyke and you're still not 100% with Ja'Kari Brown, and you're still not 100% with Emory Williams, that's just a problem in itself heading into the season. So I feel like if there's not that big jump where you say, hey, this is our number one guy, we're 100% locked in with him, I think you have to go in that portal and bring in one of the top guys across the country. Because you do see across the country how a lot of teams do have success bringing in portal guys, with Cam Hartman going to Notre Dame and he had a good first game, and Caleb Williams going to USC, winning the Heisman, and, you know, Baker Mayfield back in the day, you know, going from Texas Tech to Oklahoma. And just, you see a lot of transfer guys, Kyler Murray, another transfer that ended up winning the Heisman. A lot of transfer quarterbacks in collegiate football in the past few years have had success. So I feel like if Miami's not 100%, hey, we're locked in with this guy, this is our number one guy going into the season, I feel like Miami kind of has to dip in that portal to continue the upward trajectory that they want to see.
Hey, Greg, the one last thing I'll throw in before we move on from the subject is, as the rest of the roster keeps getting better, and you're going to see, like, when you see these running backs this year, I think you're going to be like, wow, we are significantly better at running back. And as time goes by, you're going to start seeing, you're going to see that this year at offensive line too. You're going to say, wow, we look like a real freaking offensive line this year. That'll carry over eventually to wide receivers and so forth and so on. And the thing is, and the reason why I say time may not be on his side, is you can't hold the whole rest of the football team back by installing a special offense just for one guy. I mean, that's not fair to those other kids. I mean, you have a system here with Shannon Dawson that has proven to rack up yardage and crazy stats and points. And as your talent level elevates, they're going to be able to execute that offense, and Miami is going to have an explosive offense, if not this year, very, very soon. So, and I think it could be this year. So all these things are kind of forces that are working together. Greg, I hope we answered your question and gave you an idea where all that stands.
Okay. Can I just say one thing here? Did you know that the quarterback that Dawson had last year has a chance to start for the Arizona Cardinals this year?
Yeah. He put up amazing numbers.
Have to have some kind of confidence that he's a good developer of a quarterback. So, I don't know, but I'll let you go. But I could just say last year was the worst season I've ever seen, and I've been watching the Hurricanes for a very long time. A 7-5 season is not going to do it this year. I don't care. We need at least 9 wins to keep these players in the recruiting class and get some other guys. I'll let you go. Thank you.
All right, Greg, great hearing from you again. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, let's go out to the 786. You are live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary, how are you?
Hey, what's up, everything? Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Zuby, welcome to the madness that we call Kane Sport Live on Tuesday.
Thank you. I'm excited to be a part of it all.
You're from South Florida, correct?
Yep, born and raised in Fort Myers, Florida, about 2 hours on the West Coast, Southwest Florida.
Well, even better to have you. Gary needs to get you a new NIL deal, man. You're producing a lot more than what they're paying you for, so let's get that fixed, Gary, huh?
Everything. Listen, we take Venmo payments, okay? You can contribute to the Azubi Fund.
You got it. It's in route right now. It's in route.
All right.
And it's not in the group text with John either, with Ruiz, so it's gonna come through. Anyway, just wanted to go ahead and point out how exciting it is to have this opportunity once again to see where our program's going to go this year. I know there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of concerns. I also want to acknowledge the phenomenal job you have always done, and Matt. You get information, you confirm it, and you put it out there. And I think it's a disservice for a lot of the young journalists out there that quite don't understand what their real world is. Yes. You're paying, you're trying to get subscriptions, you're trying to, you know, make a living. I get that. But the sincerity of the information you've always provided us, whether we like it or not, it's always been there. And that's what journalism is, Gary. So kudos to you and your staff for always keeping things real. I think what I've heard, which I didn't hear anything until Thursday of last week, but it wasn't serious basically on what I heard. But it still has to be a concern. When there's an issue, especially with your throwing hand, you know, one hit, anything that happens pretty much adds to the situation he's dealing with to begin with. So So, yes, there has to be a concern. And Greg's question about do we have a backup quarterback, you know, I think from what I saw from spring to what we saw a couple of weeks ago at Hard Rock, this kid has gotten better and better and better, and he looks to be more comfortable, but he's more assertive. I think his football IQ has always been there. It's never been a question. His athletic ability, his ability to get the ball where it needs to be, all those things have been fine-tuned, and he just continues to grow. Of the three quarterbacks right now, I think he's the one that has the highest ceiling, and people are going to laugh at me for saying that. But I just think Emory is pretty much a special talent that we have. Got a long way to go, obviously. But if Tyler can't go, I think this kid's going to go ahead and take the opportunity. He might not be successful very early on, but Gary, he has a lot of great tools, a lot of things he can't teach. So I feel pretty confident in our backup quarterback situation.
Yep, we totally agree with you. Well, I mean, it's not deep by any stretch of the imagination, but and Emery's a true freshman, but everything we've seen is he can execute pretty much every throw and every play. He's just going to have, it's going to be a little bit different if he has to go into a game.
And this is where the impact of Mario in his second year and his staff is going to be there. It's going to be evident. It's going to be obvious. The best thing to help quarterback is a run game. We've got an entirely new offensive line, pretty much. You still have a guy or two playing out of position, in my opinion, because we don't have enough guys that are ready to go right now. And we don't have that deep of depth in terms of quality depth. You really don't. You have a lot of young and inexperienced guys. There's talent there, but it's not refined yet. So the chemistry that we're going to see hopefully Friday night, if we're able to really go ahead and run the ball, assert ourselves, win those battles, push people back, not just, your frontline people, get to the second and third level. If you see that type of execution on Friday night, I'm hoping we see that. I think that's going to really impact our offensive level of play across the board, because now when you get to Texas A&M coming in here the week after and the rest of our opponents early on, they've got to respect the run. And now you got to make a decision what you're going to do in the box. And now you've got a defense that has to come up with different scenarios to go ahead and stop the run, which should alleviate the type of pressure we're going to see on the outside, what we're going to see against our slot. Those things should all come into play. But if our offensive line is just somewhat similar to last year, Gary, it's going to be a very difficult year. There's no other way of saying it but just to go ahead and call it out. How our offensive line goes is how our team's going to go this year. On the other side of the ball, you look at our defensive line. We're not deep at tackle. We've got pretty much three guys that are similar rotating in the tackle spot. We still don't have that space either. I know you've mentioned, I think, the kid Horton, but he's a long way to go. The kid from Cardinal Gibbons has made some progress, but they're space eaters. We've had a history of having space eaters. We need to have a guy that's just a dominant force that pretty much you have to scheme against each and every single snap. I don't think we have that. So when you add everything across the board, 8-4, 7-5, that's the range we're looking at. Is that going to be enough to keep the quality young players we do have currently? Is that going to be able to make sure that we can continue to get and maintain the commitments that we do have that are high-level kids? It comes down to winning. So I know it's year two, and, I don't want to go ahead and sound too pessimistic here, and I don't want to quote Matt, but we have to win this year to have a chance to make enough progress for year three. And if we don't, we're just going to be stuck in the mud once again.
Yep. Great thoughts, everything. Well, it's great to hear your voice again, and looking forward to hearing your opinions every single week.
Anything on the recruiting front right now?
Not right now. The kids that are going to commit have probably already committed, for right now. I don't know that there's a lot going on right this minute.
Izubi, would you say that Jeremiah really is just not even considering us right now? Or is he really being sincere?
I think he's being very honest with that. I feel like the biggest thing I've said this time in and time out, I feel like if Miami shows Jeremiah Smith this year that, hey, we can have a number one guy that, you know, can rack. Obviously, you know, it's going to be hard to find that number one guy, but if we can find one that, you know, 1,000-yard season, you know, double-digit touchdowns and send him to the league or just a very productive wide receiver, that's going to give him something to think about. And obviously, you know, having JoJo Trader committed and having Zaquan Patterson committed as well helps. But I feel like the biggest thing is Miami goes out this year and shows that, you know, they've made improvements on the field. I feel like that'll be the biggest thing to help swing Jeremiah because they've done everything they possibly can with recruiting pitches and probably, you know, showing him everything in NIL-wise. I feel like now is the time you go out on the field, you show him, hey, we can produce receivers at a high level like the Ohio State that you want to go to. Obviously, we can't show you in 1 year that we can do what they've done the past 5 years, but if you give us that chance, if we show you something, then maybe he might reconsider it. But I don't think it's completely out the window that Miami, you know, has the chances to flip Jeremiah Smith just yet.
All right, everything, got to let you go. Got to let you go, but thanks as always for being part of the show, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Be well, Gary. Be well, guys.
Thank you. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the number one on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. Let's go out to the 757. You are now live on Kane Sport Live.
Yeah. Here we go. You act like you don't know who it is. That's bad, man. That means you don't like me, but I'm a fry. It's cool. It's the first. It's Kane, but you ain't got to announce me like you announce everybody else. I got to watch you, Gary, because you a slick. And the whole world is with you. Watch Gary, man. He's slick, bro. He got a lot of slickism with him from top to bottom, for sure. Now, I'm tired of all this stuff about 5-7 and 7-5. Look, I see 5 games I'm looking at on this schedule right now. Florida State is a... to me, is a must-win, point blank. Okay, Louisville, that would be tough. Okay, Clemson, tough. Maybe Texas A&M, and I'll say Boston College. Damn, North Carolina, we should have beat them twice, but we didn't. Georgia Tech, ain't thinking about them. Temple, ain't worried about them. Texas A&M, like I said, Miami, Ohio, I'll be down there at the game. That's right, I spend my money. I bust my butt all year to come watch these boys play. They got to produce this year. Everybody knows that. I don't know what we got. I'm tired of all the hype. We done had hype for 25 damn years and ain't won nothing and ain't did nothing. So let's see what they do on the field, like you say. Ain't nobody going to get this, that, or third. Tyler Van Dyke, Cam. There's a little thing going on this summer with that Cam thing. You know, I'm kind of warm, but I peeled back a little bit. But I tell you what, I tell you one thing. If that old line is going to be good, like y'all believe it's going to be, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. So just 5 games. So I think we can go 8-4. I would say we could win every game, but just everybody say I'm crazy as hell anyway. But other than that, I ain't going to hold nobody. It's Kane Kane. I'm coming at you live, and I will be on top of my game this year again. So be very cool. And what's the young man beside you? What's his name again? I'm kind of slow. What's his name?
Izubi.
I like that name, brother. Sound like you're from Zulu Nation, but that's good. Wherever you're from, watch Gary. Damn it. Please watch him. He cool, but he slick. He slick, slick, slick. He like to throw them little curveball with players. So with that being said, go Kings. 305. Let's win game one. Oh, yeah, and I will be back next week for Texas A&M. Damn right. From Virginia to J, I spend my money. I bust my ass all year so I can go see the Kings play. Till next time, ride or die. We out. Peace.
All right, King Kane, have a great night. Azubi, I told you, man. I told you, you're coming into the jungle here.
That was awesome, man. I love his energy. Hopefully, I get to see him outside the stadium and introduce myself to King Kane in person, man. That's awesome. I love the energy. Need more fans like that coming down and supporting the guys this year, man, because those players really, really, really do appreciate all the love and support from the people that pack out Hard Rock Stadium.
He is, man. He's the best. All right, let's go out to the 941. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hi, Gary. This is Mikester Kane.
Mikester, welcome back.
Hey, I got to tell you, Gary. Kane Kane's on top of the game, man.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, shout out to Kane Kane. You're the man, Kane Kane. There you go. All right. Well, let's get underway here. Let's talk a little bit about recruiting here. Question for you guys. Do you believe that we can get Jeremiah Smith to flip from Ohio State or no? What do you guys think? Your opinion.
Go ahead, Azubi. You take that one.
Yeah, so we just spoke a little bit about it with everything. And I said I don't think it's completely out the window, but I do feel like Miami's going to need to show him this season that they can produce and have high-level receivers make big plays at Miami. The biggest reason he wants to go to Ohio State is because Brian Hartline has sent numerous guys to the league the past 3 or 4 years. I think there was 2 first-round picks coming out of Ohio State, wide receiver 2 years ago, and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. And, you know, they just keep producing guys. As of late, you know, Michael Thomas is another guy that came out of Ohio State. And Jackson Smith and Jigba last year, another first-round pick wide receiver from Ohio State. So, you know, Marvin Harrison, another guy this year that is in Heisman contention, is going to be a first-round pick next year. So if you look at the last 4 or 5 years, each year Ohio State has sent a wide receiver to the draft and has been selected in the first round. So I feel like the biggest thing Miami has to do, like I said, they've gave him all the recruiting pitches. They've probably said enough and some to him about it. Now I feel like Miami just has to go out on the field and show him that, hey, we can have guys that can do the same thing as the big schools and just really, you know, produce. I feel like production is going to be the biggest thing he needs to see this year to even consider Miami someone. I feel like if Miami can go out and have maybe a Kobe Young or a Ray Ray or Jacoby George have a really big season, that might give him something to think about a little bit more. And like I said, having your teammate Josiah Crady committed to Miami, if he's in your ear a lot, if you have Zaquan Patterson, another one of his close friends committed to Miami and he is here a lot, I feel like that can help the Hurricanes' chances. But I do not feel like the door is completely closed right now because he's still taking visits and he's still, you know, flirting with other programs. If he was like, hey, I'm not taking any visits, I'm shutting things down, then I would say it'd be a bit harder. But right now he's flirting with other programs. He said he wants to see Miami produce on the field, so produce on the field, and I think Miami has a shot to flip Jeremiah Smith.
Oh, okay, cool. Hey, guys, I got another call coming in. It's important, so I got to let you go, but I'll talk to you later, okay?
You got it, man. Thank you for calling in. We'll talk to you next week. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550 is the number. You hit the number one on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. We'd like to hear from a lot of different guys this season. You know, let's get some first-time callers on the show. Always good to hear from you guys who have never been on the show before, get some new voices on here. Let's go right now to the 706. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary, it's your boy Sebastian. How are you and Azubi doing?
We are cranking, man. How you been? Did you have a good offseason?
I did have a good offseason, man. Got married, moved to Virginia, and hoping to catch maybe one or two Canes game, probably catch the Georgia Tech game.
Married, huh?
Yeah,
wow,
tell us
real quick about the missus. Who would have you?
Hey, man, you know, so I'm in the military, and, you know, I've been doing the remote thing for 2 years. We've been dating for 4, and, you know, it just kind of worked out that I was able to, you know, I've been working on her for about a couple of years, and it all worked out. So I'm not living that bachelor life again, so I'm excited about that.
All right, congratulations.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So I got a couple questions for both you and Azubi. I got one for you, and I got one for Azubi. I'll start with Azubi first. Azubi, I really appreciate the work that you've been doing and the content, the feedback. You can see Gary definitely has an eye for talent for bringing you and the other guy that's on the squad. But Azubi, the question I have for you is, how concerned are you at about our team at the safety position? I know we got talent with Williams and Cam Kitchen, but I'm concerned about the depth behind those guys, especially if the injury bug kind of gets one of us. Do you have any insight that gives us any confidence in knowing that we'll be successful on that side of the field?
Yeah, so that is one thing that I was a bit concerned about heading into this the spring and fall camp and all that stuff. But, you know, after seeing the first scrimmage live at Hard Rock, I saw Marquise Williams, and, you know, he was running with the first team a little bit. And, you know, obviously he didn't have, you know, that big of a season last year, really showed anything off last year. So when I saw that, when he came out with the first team, kind of scratched my head and said, okay, this is interesting. But, you know, after watching him play, I really, really do like him as kind of a security blanket behind Cam Kitchens and James Williams, Marquise Williams, you know, coming in. And he showed a lot. He showed, you know, he wasn't scared to get out in the box and make a tackle. Obviously, he's not the biggest guy, but he's making his presence felt down there. He was doing good in coverage. He was, you know, I feel like he had 2 or 3 pass breakups in that scrimmage too.
So I feel like Marquise Williams is kind of like a good, you know, second option to those two guys. And another guy that I really do want to see here, I kind of have a little bit of confidence in, is true freshman Caleb Spencer, you know, formerly committed to Oklahoma and, you know, made that switch to Miami, you know, before National Signing Day. And the thing that I love about him the most is his size. He is a physical presence. I remember watching the safeties group during the spring when he first got on campus when James Williams wasn't, you know, really practicing because he was injured. And I was like, man, this Caleb kid has size and looks like a D1 ball player off rip, and that's something you can't teach his size. So I feel like with Marquise and if Caleb comes along, like I think he should be under the guidance of Guidry, I feel like Miami kind of has, you know, more depth than people think. Obviously not the deepest position group for the Hurricanes right now, but I feel like Marquise Williams and Caleb are guys that, you know, if their names get called upon, they won't, you know, be a complete blunder or be a complete red flag in that secondary for Miami.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Zuby. Yeah, that's good. That's kind of good to know. I wasn't even tracking Caleb Spencer. I know he was a late addition to the squad last year, but I thought he was more or less like a redshirt candidate. But
well, he'll help them a lot on special teams. He's going to help a lot on special teams. Yeah.
So I feel a little bit better about that. But, you know, having those two guys that's starting at that position is great. But if one gets nicked up, I was really, really concerned about what that was going to look like. Would that blow the whole entire defense going into the season? So the question I have for you, Gary, is, you know, Gary, what could you share with us your thoughts in relation to how important the run game is going to be for the team this year? When you look at college football, you know, success and failure, it really comes down to how well teams are able to run the ball on third and short and getting those crucial first downs. And you know, Miami going into the season is going to be important for us to respect every opponent. But I thought where they've struggled the last couple of years is their inability to be able to get short yardage on third down, which having to go to the pass. So, Gary, you know, you guys have gotten a chance to see what the O-line looks like. You guys are pretty impressed with the run game. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on, you know, how crucial, you know, the run game is going to be for us to have a successful season?
I think it's going to be huge. I love the injection of talent at running back, but even more so, I love the injection of talent on the offensive line. And it starts in the middle with this guy, Matt Lee. He's a tough kid, very smart guy, gets the calls, gets everybody working together, and just sets a great leadership example in the offensive line room. And, you know, I was talking to somebody who – has been start to finish it at pretty much every practice. And I was talking about Leonard Taylor, and, you know, it's like I love Leonard Taylor. He's a really nice kid. I just want to really see him play harder this year and be more consistent. And so I was being told, well, you know, he's doing much better. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. If he's going head-to-head with Matt Lee, how does that go? You know, how's that going to work out? And this was the answer I got. I was told that Matt Lee will eat him alive, okay? And that told me all I needed to hear, you know, that Matt Lee is the real deal right there in the middle. He is going to be a big foundation piece. And then you go to his left side, you got Javion Cohen out there. And this is a kid that was a frontline player for Alabama, probably as polished of an offensive lineman that's come into the program in a very long time. You've got a five-star freshman, and I know he's a freshman, but Francis Maiagoa is not your typical freshman. This is a very mature kid. He walked right into the program, and they put him right there at first-team right tackle, and he hasn't disappointed from that single day. He's a big, strong kid. You've got a Nez Cooper who's trimmed down a little bit, lost, I don't know, 20, 25 pounds or so, is in better shape this year, but still is a massive human being. And then you've got Jalen Rivers, who's moved out to left tackle, and, you know, there have been some growing pains, no argument. I mean, people saw him have one or two bad plays in the spring game and freaked out a little bit. But this is a guy that's going to go to the National Football League after this season, in my opinion. And he's a very good offensive lineman. So the offensive line in general is going to be massively better, and it's the head coach's baby, okay? So there are going to be times when he is going to tell Shannon Dawson, let's run the football, let's be honest. I hope that goes well because, you know, Shannon Dawson likes to sling it around a little bit too. So, you know, they'll be working that out amongst themselves as during the course of the season. But you look at the talent that's coming at running back with Mark Fletcher and Ajay Allen to complement Henry Parrish and Don Chaney. This is, if these guys stay healthy, as deep and talented as the running back room has been in a while, with all respects to Jalen Knighton. I mean, and Mark Fletcher gives them that big physical running back that can pick up those yards on third and one, what you're talking about, behind a better offensive line. So I think it's huge. I think that it's going to be great. I hope I'm not overselling it. I hope it turns out that way. I am very bullish on the Miami run game. I'm very bullish on what they've done at running back and offensive line. And I think that their ability to run the football is going to very well set up Shannon Dawson's passing game as well.
Hey, Gary, I really appreciate that commentary because I will tell you, you're going to hear groin pains every single time we can't convert a third and two. I mean, I'm probably going to have to buy a new television. If we can't get third and two, that tells me that's a precursor of what the whole entire season is going to look like for me. Hey, guys, I know there's a lot of other people that need to come on the call. I'll end with this last question, both for you and for you, Gary. If there's two players that you would say is a rebound candidate that you're really looking to see that's going to really have some positive impact on the team, who are those two? Who are those players, and why would you identify them as a big rebound player? It could be a player that's coming off an injury, somebody that maybe transferred into the program, maybe somebody who redshirted last year, just somebody who you think a second-year player that you have your eyes on in relation to what kind of positive impact they could have on the team. And just answer that question and just keep me on hold, and I look forward to riding with both you guys all through the year.
All right, Sebastian. Boy, rebound player. I mean, I got to start with Tyler Van Dyke because of how horribly last year went, you know, between starting out slow and then getting injured. But beyond that, I think I got to look outside at maybe the wide receivers, maybe like a Jacoby George. You know, could this be the year that he puts it all together? I mean, we've seen a play every 6 months from him to this point, quite honestly. Have not seen a lot, but he's capable of doing much better. He's of a lot more than what he has shown us. And I think he could be a rebound type of player. Azubi, who am I not thinking about? Let's see, defense.
I think I have my two guys in mind. I have I'm sticking on the offense. I'm going Elijah Arroyo. Obviously, a lot of people think he's going to be that tight end one this year coming in for Will Mallory. We saw little glimpses of what he can do in that Texas A&M game, had that big catch, and then kind of, you know, blew out his knee towards ACL and kind of rehabbing his way back. And a lot of people think he's going to have a big role this year. And another one that I was thinking is kind of Javion Cohen. I know when he first came to Miami, a lot of people questioned, like, oh, did he leave Alabama because he wasn't going to play or, you know, things like that. Why would he leave a national championship program to come to Miami? And I remember in the early parts of the spring and fall, people reporting he wasn't working enough, and then he started tweeting, all right, I'm going to show you guys I'm going to work. So I feel like he's coming here with something to prove to guys saying, hey, I didn't leave Alabama because, you know, this and that. I just came to Miami because I thought this was the best opportunity for me. So I feel like Elijah Roy coming off injury, being that number one guy at tight end, Javion Cohen coming to Miami and saying, hey, I might have left Alabama, but I'm still, you know, one of the best guards in the country. So those are, I think, my two guys. And I'll give a little, you know, love to James Williams. I feel like he was battling injuries last year, and he, you know, seeing, you know, your running mate Cam Kitchens, you know, get All-American and everyone showing him all that love, I feel like he has, you know, all right, let me have something to prove now. Let me show these guys that, hey, we really are the best, you know, safety duo in the country. So those are kind of my three players that I feel like are going to have a rebound year and potentially, you know, make a name for themselves.
Another name I'll throw out is Chance Williams. He's a defensive end. He's been in the program for a few years, hasn't done a whole heck of a lot. But I've been hearing some positive reports on him from the practice field. So I think that we could think about him a little bit. I'm not sure if we're missing anybody else, but if we are, we'll know it pretty quickly. So anyway, Sebastian, I hope we answered your question well there. Hey, guys, let me take a moment here to talk to you about Sicilian Oven Restaurants. Certainly not your typical Italian restaurant. If you live in South Florida, Sicilian Oven has locations throughout the area: Aventura, Plantation, Boca Raton, Coral Springs, Fort Lauderdale, Lighthouse Point, Delray Beach, and Wellington. And that that Plantation location, and really the Aventura location as well, are really not that far from Hard Rock Stadium, so you could go by there on your way to or home from games and get yourself some great food, because Sicilian Oven arguably has the best wood-fired pizza that South Florida has to offer. It's a restaurant chain that was founded by Ralph DeSalvo of DeSalvo's fame and Andrew Garavuso in 2008. These two ingenious restaurateurs have created a concept that offers something great for everyone. They have pastas and salad in addition to the pizzas. They have sandwiches, wood-fired wings, and special dishes that have been passed on through the years by the DeSalvo and Garavuso families, like shrimp Palermo and eggplant Reggiano. With a romantically cozy atmosphere, this team couples the love of a home-cooked meal with a sentimental and intimate dining experience. So take the time to check out Sicilian Oven at one of those 8 South Florida locations. Look them up at SicilianOven.com. You can get directions and the addresses there. That's SicilianOven.com. Check them out in Aventura Plantation, Boca Raton, Coral Springs, Fort Lauderdale, Lighthouse Point, Delray Beach, or Wellington. You will not be sorry. Well, one of their best customers is going to be joining us here in a few minutes, the voice of the fan, Bruce Warner, and he will back me up big time that Sicilian Oven is a go-to place when you want a good meal in South Florida. Okay, 563-999-3550 is our number, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We got a lot of open lines for you guys. We're getting deep in the queue right now, so if you want to come on the show tonight, hit that 1 on your keypad when you call in, and we'll get you in the lineup. Right now, let's go out to the 646. You are live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, what's up, Gary? BK or Kane?
Hey, what's up, BK? Welcome back.
What's going on, Zuby? Good to be back, Gary. It's a long off season.
Hey, BK, how you doing, man?
What's going on? Listen, guys, quick question, okay? Let's just say we win 8 games. For argument's sake, we win 8 games. But the 4 losses are Clemson, Florida State, Texas A&M, and North Carolina. Is that a good season?
Wait, you're saying – say it again.
Let's just say we only win – we win 8 games this year, meaning we lose 4, right?
Oh, 8 games. Okay, all right, I'm with you.
8 games, I'm sorry. Let's just say we win 8 games, but the 4 games we lose are Clemson, North Carolina, Florida State, and Texas A&M. Is that a good season?
I don't know, man. What do you think, Azubi?
So with me, I made my prediction. I said 9-3, and I said that because I feel like if you don't win 9 games, that's going to be, you know, kind of head-scratching, hard to kind of build momentum and keep in the top talent guys. I feel like 8 games is the bare minimum. Obviously, losing to those four guys, arguably the 4 biggest games, isn't the best look, but I feel like 8 games is a step in the right direction, and that gives you opportunity to win that 9th game in the bowl game. So I wouldn't say it's the end of the world, but obviously losing those 4 games, those are going to be the games that a lot of recruits are going to be at. So that won't be, you know, the best look for on the recruiting trail, but I don't feel like it's going to be the end of the world if they lose those 4 games but win 8 in return.
I mean, to win those 8, and you know, you're going to have to not slip up anywhere. But, I mean, I'm telling you, man, I said this at the top of the show, I want to see these guys beat somebody this year. I don't want to just say they're going to lose those games. Like,
those are the 4 somebodies. They got to beat at least 1, maybe 2 of them.
You got to. Like, you got to beat somebody. I mean, it's time. You know, it's just it's time.
If we lose – we go 8-4. We lose those 4 games. And I hate to say it, we're back in the portal again. Heavy. We're are going to be heavy back in the portal, and I just don't want to see it. I want to see us flip Stone. I want Jeremiah flip. If we lose those four, we're back in the portal again, hunting, looking for D linemen, probably looking for a wide receiver or two again, safeties again. I mean, Jesus Christ. We got to at least beat Florida State. If I'm going to put it out there, we at least got to beat Florida State and look competitive against everybody else. I mean, I would definitely knock off North Carolina too, but damn.
I mean, look, they're going to be underdogs in those games. There's no question of that. And losing them is what the general expectation is in the college football world. I mean, people think this is going to be a 6 or 7 win football team, barely squeaking into a nondescript bowl game. You look at all the bowl predictions. I'm seeing things like the Sun Bowl in El Paso, which is the same, you know, same plus same equals same that we've seen here for many, many years. I'm hoping that they can be better than that. I think 8 is the bar. I'm hoping for at least 9, quite frankly, just because, like I said, it is time, you know, and they do have better talent. It's not a complete football team by any stretch. Injuries are going to define a lot, but it's just, I think it's time to start beating some better programs.
They have to. Florida State pulled it off last year. The year before, Florida State was straight garbage. They come out first game of the year. Granted, LSU gave them the game, but that set the momentum for the rest of the season for Florida State. And ended up winning 10 games. Prior year, they won 5, just like we. I'm just like we were 5-7. Florida State was 5-7 the year before they won. They pulled off 10 games last year. I'm not saying 10. But I'll give you 8, but we got to beat one of those 4.
Yeah, that's fair.
We have to beat one of those 4, or we're going to be all over the portal again. We're going to miss out on recruits. We need one of those wins. And I would prefer it to not be North Carolina State, because we've been on the verge of beating them the last 3 years, but we always find a way to screw it up with North Carolina.
Yeah, so no, you got to win. You got to beat North Carolina State. Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah. You know, oh, man, I'm just tired of the portal, Gary. Gary Azubi, I'm sick and tired of the portal. I'm tired of it.
Well, it's not just about the portal. I mean, the portal's done a nice job for Florida State. I mean, they've put a top 10 team together through the portal. I mean, so it's not like the portal is a disaster, but like, I agree with you. You want to develop your talent. They brought 25 recruits in this year. They're going to bring another 25 in this next year. And that's how you really want to build your program. But it's beyond that. It just beat somebody.
That's it.
Yeah. That's the goal for this season. Nice beat somebody.
It'd be really nice if you could beat Florida State and Texas A&M. I would love it. I would love it. That would do a lot for recruiting, but damn, come on, man. No. Shit.
Listen, Florida State in Tallahassee, I'm guessing that's going to be a night game probably. I mean, that's not going to be an easy moment. To me, the defining game of this season potentially could be next week against Texas A&M. I agree with you. You got to find a way to win that game.
Florida State is a little overhyped.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Like, do you think Florida State is just a little overhyped? I'm not saying they're a bad team. I'm not saying that. But come on, they got this Jordan Travis guy and Heisman winner. Oh, they're gonna, you know, possibly make the playoffs. There's no way Florida State is making the playoffs. No way.
You know, they got a really big test Saturday, so we're gonna see where that hype is, because LSU is a very, very good team. Just like Florida State returned most of their guys. They're coming off, like you said, that game that they should have won. So, if I feel like that'll be their test to see, you know, how real they are week one. So, I'm gonna definitely have my eyes on that game.
If Florida State beats this LSU team that's coming for blood, I'm a believer.
Yeah.
But if they lose to LSU, their schedule isn't all that you know, scary, you know, but we just got to beat them. We got to find a way. We got to find a way to beat Texas A&M. We got to find a way, because if we could beat Texas A&M, that's momentum, and that might be the momentum that carries us the same way Florida State carried that momentum against LSU. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm hoping we could look halfway decent in the secondary this year. But guys, yep. That's it. Gary, as always, I really appreciate it. Azubi,
Thank you.
All right, Sebastian, we'll talk to you next week, man. Thank you for being part of the show.
That was VK, Gary.
Oh, I'm sorry. my bad. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. We're going to be joining Bruce Warner and Dwayne Starks here momentarily. But first, let's go out to the 205. You are live on Kane Sport Live. How are you doing this evening?
What's up, Gary? There goes JC4. How you doing today?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. I'm optimistic. I'm excited to watch this team play. We can don 2023 to give us a reason season. They need to give us something to believe in and beat somebody they're not supposed to beat and start beating the teams they are supposed to beat and look like a big-time college football program.
Well, I think the word you – I heard you just use the word excited. I think that's a great word. I don't know what the final record is going to be, but I think this is going to be an exciting team to watch on both sides of the ball. Offensively, we've talked a lot about it with the improved running game, the improved offensive line, Tyler coming back, the Shannon Dawson explosive offense. But it's going to be exciting to watch on defense, too, because of the way Lance Guidry approaches the game. Time will tell how effective it is. But this is a coach that's going to be bringing blitzes from all directions, moving guys around. It's a very dynamic defensive scheme that he runs that's not the easiest thing to prepare for. And there should be a lot of big plays.
Yeah, no doubt. I think we've gotten away from – I think Mario made the mistake of hiring two coordinators that he would have probably liked to have had in 3 to 5 years as opposed to hiring coordinators that he would have needed to help him win immediately. And you've seen him kind of revert back to that. And I think this season is going to be all about running the ball, stopping the run, and explosive plays, because those were areas that they lost in repeatedly last season. So if they can find an identity on offense, there was no identity on offense. I know the last year was a revolving door on the offensive line with injuries and injuries at quarterback and injuries at running back. And so it's really hard to find an identity, but I think if the identity of this team can be fortified in the first game, a couple games, finding a way to run the ball, move people. We'll know after the first game if this team is going to be for real or not. Because if they have to dip in the bag and get away from their base offense because they're getting beat up front on both sides of the ball, that's going to be an indicator that maybe they're still a ways away from where they need to be.
Mm-hmm. All right, you got Ben. Any other thoughts for us tonight?
I do. I got to ask you a question. So, given the influx of talent, freshman talent, give me a guy that you see, because competition is going to go through all throughout the season. That's typical, and freshmen are going to continue to get better. Give me a guy that you think is a freshman or a redshirt freshman under the radar that you think will work his way into the starting lineup by the end of the season. I'll give you mine now. You give me yours. Mine is Popo Aguirre. I think he'll work his way into the linebacker rotation before season's end, and you'll see K4 or Corey Flagg get kind of worked out.
Yeah, you know, everybody wants to get rid of Corey Flagg, and I get it that they, you know, they want a more dynamic player there. This kid is like an immovable object. I mean, this is the second straight training camp that he's emerging out of, and at least from what we've been hearing, they have not been able to move him out. Wesley Bissaint hasn't been able to do it. K4 hasn't been able to do it. Popo's a freshman. He's learning. I don't know that that would be a fair expectation after a few weeks of training camp like this, but you know, the point is that Corey Flagg has proven to be very tough to move out of there. But anyway, to answer your question, I'm going to say Ray Ray Joseph. That's my guy. You know, he doesn't have to be a starter coming out of the gate. You know, they've got Restrepo there, and you know, Colby and Jacoby and these guys. But I think Ray Ray Joseph, if he is schemed as well as I think Shannon Dawson will scheme him, has a chance to be a real explosive player this season. And I think he is a true freshman that's going to make a big mark. Azubi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do. Like, ever since I, you know, came down here and started covering South Florida football, I've always said Ray Ray's a special talent. And, you know, his head coach, Luther Campbell, always said, hey, Ray Ray's a special talent too. And we saw glimpses of that in the spring and in the scrimmage and things like that. But I'm going to have to go with a guy on the defensive side of the ball that, you know, he's a top 100 recruit. I feel like he's kind of flown under the radar. And he had a good scrimmage. I'm going to have to say Jaden Wayne. I feel like by the end of the year, we're going to see his name pop up more in that defensive end rotation, in that D-line rotation coming off the edge. Because what I saw from him in the scrimmage, I think he had two or three sacks. He really, you know, came on towards the end when, you know, they're running the two-minute drill and other situations. So I think, you know, my guy, I think that's kind of going to have not a breakout season but become a name to watch towards the end of the season is Jaden Wayne.
And let's not forget Reuben Maine.
You're a really smart guy. I'm talking about guys that aren't going to immediately contribute. So I think Jaden Wayne would have been number two for me. But getting back to Ray Ray, that's a great point you make. He and Tyler Harrell bring something to this receiving core that's been sorely, sorely lacking, that are so important to this style of offense. When you have somebody that commands the safety cap, that lightens the box, I mean Tyler Harrell and Ray Ray, lightens the box, and it creates so much vertical space that allows guys like Restrepo, allows guys like Colby Young to win underneath and then your intermediate routes. Just that ability for them to stretch the field creates throwing lanes and space for everyone else. So, yeah, Ray Ray and Tyler Harrell, I couldn't be more excited to watch them in this offense.
Yep, no doubt. You got anything else for us tonight?
No, sir. I'll call next week. Looking forward to the game and diagnosing some stuff.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for being part of the show. We'll talk to you next week. All right, guys, it's time for a lot of people's favorite point of the show, and that's our point-counterpoint segment presented by Sicilian Oven with the voice of the fan, Bruce Warner, and we always try to bring on a former player. And tonight we have joining us former Cane Dwayne Starks. We always try to have him on at least once every season. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal guest, has incredible insight into the game, great opinions. Dwayne was a two-year starter for the Canes in 1996 and 97, and then went on to play in the National Football League for 9 years with the Baltimore Ravens, Arizona Cardinals, New England Patriots, and the Oakland Raiders. So without further ado, let's bring them in. Bruce, Dwayne, welcome back to Cane Sport Live. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Don't cheat me now. I got 10 years, not 9.
Oh, was it 10? I'm sorry.
Let's cut him off. Let's cut him off already. The guy had a pick six against my Giants in the Super Bowl. So,
oh, man.
As much as I love Dwayne, I'll never forgive him for that.
Don't punish me. Don't punish me.
I don't punish you. My friend, man. You've been my friend. So, all right. So now we got a lot of new players. D-Stark. So we got a lot of new players. Everybody knows it. That's what we've been talking about. You know, I listened to the show right from the inception. How did these guys gel as a unit? Because you got two new coordinators. You got 40 new players. First game is on Friday. Can they really come out and be on fire on all cylinders, or if that's a work in progress?
I say it's possible. It depends on how much they've done in the off season. It also depends on the, coaching. You know, you can get a coach that's very transparent and that the kids understand. A lot of the work is going to come in the film room, especially to create that communication level. Of course, a lot of the kids don't have the experience of playing with each other, but at the same time, you have to get that knowledge somewhere, and I think it starts in the film room and in the off season.
Now, we've been hearing all along about defense that Guidry's going to throw out there, and it's like a scrambled defense. They're all over the place. Have you ever played in a defense like that, or is it pretty much standard for what you've been doing, during your career?
I would not say it's standard. I would say, if you compare what defense needs to know versus what the offense needs to know, of course you'll say that the defense is always ahead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably see that in most scrimmages, early on in the season. But now at this point in time, everyone should be a little caught up. If you're throwing guys out there, they have to be able to communicate. And that's the key to, having a successful defense. When the guy goes in motion, everyone needs to know what the adjustments are. And if you have athletes, then you can make it all happen. And I think that comes with a little time. So it could start out a little slow. If they're on point, you have the athletes that you need that can cover, that can run side to side. I think you can make up for lack of experience. But that is a tough task.
Hey Dwayne, I'm gonna be honest here, and I'm gonna point out that we do not have established great cornerbacks in the program right now. We got a lot of guys out there, some that have come through the portal, the Brown brothers. We're hoping emerge and are good big corners, but we don't know. It's one big question mark going into the season. So the question I have for you is, playing this aggressive style defense that's gonna have a lot of guys blitzing, that's gonna put mental pressure on the defensive backs to make sure they know their responsibilities when, guys are leaving space open and blitzing and things like that. How difficult is that for the corners? I mean, they really are going to have to be on their game, right?
I look at that a different way. As a corner, when you got the blitz going on, you don't have to cover for about 3 to 4 seconds. If you don't have a blitz on, you got to look at it as, I need to cover this guy, cover my zone. I need to be in the right place. Sometimes the blitz makes up for lack of, sort of everything, like lack of ability, lack of great corners, unless, they have a great offense that you're facing that's going to buy your quarterback time, or a scrambling quarterback that's going to, scramble around and the receivers give an opportunity to get them open. Now, that's a risk, But at the same time, as a corner, I loved it when we blitz because I know I can sit back. I don't have to press. I can go ahead and sit back and wait till he runs his route, and I know that the ball has to come out. So that can be a good thing. But at the same time, if you don't get the pressure that you're trying to apply, then that can be a bad thing.
I was at the practice the week before the scrimmage, and I'm sure Gary will back me on this. This team looks like they give a damn. This is not a country club atmosphere. It was not since the season ended. Do you agree, Gary? These guys have worked their asses off.
No doubt. I mean, you're not going to have it any other way on a Mario team.
Right.
I mean, that's a good thing. Mario's definitely trying to change the chemistry and what's going on there, the atmosphere, and that he's doing. I mean, guys are excited about being out there. Guys are excited about working hard and understand that there's a lot going on right now, when it comes to getting on the team and staying on the team as a starter. You got so many guys in the NI, the portal. You never know who's coming next year. And that's the scary part, too. So that gives those guys the motivation, I would say. I hope it would give them the motivation to be at the top of their game each day in and out.
Hey, Dwayne, with offenses being the way they are, and Miami's going to put one on the field this year that has this high-flying passing game, can put up a bunch of yards, score a lot of points, play up tempo at times if they want to. But the offenses are kind of like ruling right now in college football. A lot of these games become scoring contests. But you have Lance Guidry, who is trying to turn the tables on that, the new defensive coordinator, by bringing this system that likes to create havoc. Like you said, if the blitzes can be effective, the corners, defensive backs don't have to cover as long, and that makes a big difference. Do you like the idea of kind of like trying to turn the tables a little bit and saying like, you know, whoa, we're not here to play defense and let you guys, you know, use us as punching bags. We're coming after you, and we're going to make you adjust to us a little bit too.
Yeah, definitely. I like that approach. I mean, it will work for some teams, and it'll work. It won't work for some other teams. So he has to be very careful on what teams he used that approach against. Of course, you know, you got to have those guys, you know, like we had back in the days, the big D lineman that's going to apply pressure that demands the double team in order for all of those things to work. You know, if you don't have the Cortez Kennedys, you don't have the Warren Sapps, if you don't have all the other guys that made things like that happen, Patriots, Wilford, all of those guys, then, you know, whatever you try is just drawn up on the board. It has to get done on the field as well.
It could be risky, right, Dwayne? Got a lot of young kids.
Yeah, it can be very risky. And like I say, what they do in the offseason, the team camaraderie that they create, the actual communication level, the trust level is one thing as well. Especially as a corner, as a safety, you have to be able to know that other guy is in that drop zone where you need him to be. You know, if you're going to go zero coverage every time, you got to be ready and you got to be disciplined. So you just got to understand, and it's not just about the players. It's about the film. I mean, I don't know how many guys neglect watching film and studying film. You know, that makes the game so much easier. And I think if they're doing that, then I think they have a good chance of being successful. If they're not doing that, whatever offense or whatever defense is put in, yeah, you know, it's still a 50-50 toss-up.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, can you elaborate? Dwayne, can you elaborate just a little bit more on what you just said? Because I think that was kind of interesting. Just how maybe this attacking style will work against some teams, but there's some where it won't work. What kind of teams will it not work against?
When you talk about a team that's attacking, of course, this, you know, right now offenses, they're running a whole lot of pass, right? But then when you look at a team like Georgia, they can do both. They can pass. They can run. And some form, you know, blitzing all the time is not going to stop the run. And it actually runs because if the running back gets past the D line or get past the linebackers, then there's a big a fire, right, that has to be put out. You know, I coached and I'm coaching now. I coach the literally I've coached middle schools, stuff like that. When there's a team that's blitzing against us, I love to run the ball up the middle. Why? Because if he gets past the backers, that's a 20 or 30 yard gain. If they blitz through the wrong hole, and we actually just choose to pick the right hole, which they'll be studying, you know, they'll be studying what the tendencies are on our defense as much as we'll be studying what their tendencies are on offense. So you know, you run a risk of allowing things like that to happen, and if you don't study and you don't make the right choice and you don't make the right decision in the right play, then, hey, there we go. You know, we're chasing down 30 yards, and here's a 50-yard run. So you need to think about things like that when you're being overly aggressive. And one missed tackle can cause a big run.
We've seen that.
But if you have everyone sitting in the zone, okay, you know, you've got a better opportunity. Not everyone's behind the line of scrimmage trying to get to the quarterback. It just works that way. Yeah, I can't really elaborate on it as much more, you know, clear as that, because there's so many other things that could happen. But, you know, if you get everything and you guess right, I'm not going to say really guess right, but if you choose the right play for the right scenarios, then it can work in your favor. then the other team really have to be great athletes to overcome that.
Well, one of the things that I know Mario worked on, because, again, I was there, I saw it, is physicality. He stresses physicality. He wants these guys, you know, to knock people around. And they were hitting each other, that's for sure. I saw a lot of ones versus ones, and he was saying that yesterday in his press conference. So I think they're going to be physically ready. I don't know if they're going to have a lot of the plays in for this game. I think they want to take it easy. I don't know if Gary agrees. I don't think they're going to show A&M too much. I think they could win this game, and they should win this game rather handily.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. I mean, for one, being physical is probably more than half the battle, because at the same time, you have to go in and try to dominate. If you can dominate the opponent, you put too much on them. You know, they start second-guessing themselves, like, hey, this guy's too fast for me, this guy's too strong for me. And they don't want to play. You can knock the fight out of a guy if you continue to just grind him and grind him. You knock the fight out of him. You see it a lot, day in and day out, each week.
Gary, where's Azubi? Is he in this?
He's here. He's just chilling out, listening to the greatness.
Yo, I'm soaking up all the knowledge right now.
All right, Azubi, I'm Bruce. Nice to meet you, my friend. So
glad to meet you, Bruce.
You know, yeah, so anyway, Gary, your thoughts. I mean, I don't know what records are going to be. I don't really know. I'm excited. I think that's the key word is we're excited. What we think is going to happen, I don't know if anybody knows. Nobody knows.
No.
I don't even think.
No, nobody knows. I was talking about that earlier in the show. We have no clue. I mean, we know they're bigger. We know they're stronger. We know they're faster. We know they're better. Okay, the program is better. There's no doubt in my mind without having any clue what the win total is going to be at the end of the season. But they've got to, like I've been saying all night, like they've got to – Miami hasn't beaten anybody in a long time. I mean, you can go back to, 2017 – Notre Dame in 2017,
yeah,
okay. if you want to call Notre Dame somebody. But, right, I'm with you, Dwayne, trust me. So, like Miami hasn't really beaten anybody in a very long time. And I want to see them start beating some of these teams this year.
Right. I agree. And, you know, one thing about seeing a team before the season start, which is basically I call preseason because, you know, that's what we do in the NFL, is preseason is preseason, right? But until you line up against the other teams, because, of course, the other teams feel like they've gotten better as well, right? They've improved their roster or whatever the case may be. And, of course, they feel like they've gotten better. So until you put that matchup together, then you will really know what you have.
That's a great point, because I haven't seen NC State. I understand North Carolina lost a lot of people, which could be very good. You know, we may be able to get that quarterback knocked around a few times, and I think we could beat them. I think we're going to beat A&M and North Carolina and lose to Clemson and Florida State, and I don't know what's going to happen in NC State. They're not that good, but it is a road game, so that's I'm going with Azubi, 9-3.
Yes, sir. I'm going back to the big game thing. The time and time again, I feel like that Texas A&M game, if they come out and they have a good showing at home, they can use that momentum to get them through that bulk of the schedule, because that UNC, Clemson, Florida State 4 or 5 game run with, you know, NC State in the middle, that's going to be a hard, you know, 4 or 5 games. But I feel like if they're confident, if they're coming off a big win against the SEC team in front of a big crowd, the team is going to kind of use that momentum, because we saw after Middle Tennessee State game, how just, you know, you felt like the energy got sucked out of the program. I feel like they make a statement with Texas A&M game. Obviously, that's not, you know, the big game that they're gonna, you know, they have to win this year, but that's just a step in the right direction. I feel like they use that game, carry them through the schedule, and things will, you know, be better than a lot of people.
I agree. That's the springboard game. But if we lose that game, I almost kind of feel like here we go again.
Bruce, I can't take here we go again. I can't take any more here we go again. I really can't. It's like, I mean, this has been 20 years of here we go again. We had a brief reprieve in 2017. But I mean.
Yeah, and Gary and I both picked us to beat LSU in Texas. That was a bust. And there's been a lot of those games that we've picked over the years that we thought, okay, hey, we're going to win this one. Hasn't happened. So I think look, I think Mario did exactly what he had to do. Did he get some of these 4- and 5-star D tackles? No, but they weren't going to play this year anyhow because they're still in high school. So we still have to do what we have to do and go out there and win on Friday night and then go out and I'm going to make this prediction. I think we beat A&M by at least 10 points.
Oof,
that's how good I think our offense is.
Okay, I want to ask this question. How do you guys feel about our defensive tackles?
Not good at all. Look, Dwayne, you and I talk. We don't have any of those guys. There's no Jerome's. There's no Russell. There's no Cortez. There's no Vince. There's no Sapp. A lot of those guys. They're just not what we need. They're not.
Okay. Here's what I'll say.
When you look at the history of the University of Miami and the championships, the world titles, all of those things, what did we have?
Always had a dominant defensive tackle.
Side of the ball.
Okay. When you look at, and here's my experience. When I look at where I played at in the NFL, played for the Baltimore Ravens, number one defense ever, right?
Yep.
What did we have? Sam Adams, Tony Siragusa, Michael McCrary, Rob Burnett, all of those guys that were dominating defense alignment. Without those guys, we couldn't have been what we were, you know? So until I start seeing that with the University of Miami again, then I would get hype. Right now, I'm like, okay, let's see what happens.
You know, let me just throw one thing in here, Bruce. What I'm going to say is that if you go talk to an NFL scout right now and you say, who is the best player on the Miami roster? And I think most of them will say Leonard Taylor, just from an NFL prospect standpoint. Now, you know, Leonard Taylor is a guy that has flashed that kind of ability maybe once every 10 plays. I interviewed Leonard at Media Day this year, and I know Leonard. We did an NIL deal with him for a little bit and stuff like that, so I got to know him a little bit. But I said, Leonard, you have flashed this. Like, everyone's saying Leonard can be that guy, and you have flashed this your first couple years every now and then. Is this going to be the year where we see that Leonard Taylor on a more regular basis? And you know what he said? He said, I admit it, I took plays off, okay?
He admitted it.
Now, I wasn't in good enough shape. I got tired out there. I took plays off, okay? Now, here it is year three. He's thinking I'm going to get drafted into the first round after this year. We need to see, like, a whole different Leonard Taylor to even come close to fulfilling what you're talking about, Dwayne.
Exactly. So that's what I'm all in for, man. I'm all in for getting the right guys in, making the plays that we need to make, putting pressure on that offense, on the offensive line, the opponent's offensive line. And then I can say, hey, we are back. So even with mediocre corners, or rather we have great corners, or mediocre corners and mediocre linebackers, if you don't have pressure up front, you're putting stress on the entire defense.
Right. And you say that. And I had Jesse Armstead on the show a few months ago, and a lot of Darren Smith. They all tell me the same thing. They're great because of what the four guys standing in front of us, you know, on the defensive line. That's what made all you guys great, because you had a lot less to worry about knowing that you had these guys rushing the passer and stopping the run. I would assume, you correct me, Dwayne, most teams are going to try to run on us. We're undersized up front.
Oh, definitely. They're definitely going to do that. They're definitely going to try to run. And like I say, my focus would be, you know, I'm a Miami guy, definitely. I'm born and raised here, and I love our talent, right, when it comes to skill positions. I don't think there's any other place out there that has skill positions like the speed and everything, like the Miami area and Fort Lauderdale, you know, the close areas here. But D linemen, we got to go get them. We got to find them. Go to Fort Myers. Go to Georgia. Go wherever you need to go. We can recruit hard. That's what we need.
Yeah, we had a bunch of them, though. I know some of them were like they were thinking they were coming to Miami, right, Azubi? And then these guys didn't come. They just didn't get it done. And I think a lot of it had to do with that 5-7. That was just horrible. It was so bad last year. It's hard to erase that taste in people's mouths. But, you know, they had shots at it. It's not over. They may pull one of these guys out of the hat, but got to win.
Right,
got to win.
Right.
Yeah, like you mentioned, that 5-7 pitch, that's really, really hard to go out of school that's, you know, coming off a college football appearance here, coming off a 10-win season, top 25. And, you know, when it comes down to it, these kids are going to programs where they think they can be developed and they think they can, you know, get to that next level. And if you're not, you know, showing a kid that in the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, that's going to be hard to kind of sell kids' dreams when there's other schools that are sending multiple guys to the draft and things like that. So I feel like if Miami starts winning this year, that recruiting is going to get a lot easier for Cristobal and all those guys.
Right. Well, A&M, they should be 5-0. I'm not saying they will be, but they should be getting ready for North Carolina. And if they could win that game, be 6-0, that would turn a lot of people's heads. That's how that's how I'm looking at it. And I think that's a real possibility. I do. Now, if you're not that, if you're not 6-0, if you're 3-3 or 4-2, I'm not going to say it.
One week at a time, Cowboy. One week at a time, Bruce.
I know. I learned that lesson a long time ago doing the shows with you. You can't predict.
We're sitting here talking 6-0. Oh my God!
Listen, I'm still friends with Kelvin Harris. What do you expect from me?
Yeah.
He's 12-0, Mr. 12-0.
Well, I think Kelvin's great at Fort Myers. My neck of the woods.
What's your neck of the woods?
I said Fort Myers. I'm pretty sure Kelvin went to Fort Myers High School.
Yeah, he did.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, he's always talking about Fort Myers.
So, Dwayne, before we go, tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days. You mentioned that you're coaching a little bit. Tell us about it.
Oh, yes, man. My son is at that age that pulled me into coaching, man. I went out there, sat down, and watched some of the dad coaches about 3-4 years ago, and I was like, this is not going to get it.
So, hey, Coach, you're my son.
So I got up out of my lounge chair, which I thought was going to be my resting place, right? And, you know, I told her, I say, listen, Coach, I say, I'll help you out once or twice a week. But I had to be there every day, so I turned into an everyday coaching job for me. So, then, you know, I end up coaching my yeah, exactly. So my son is actually playing for his middle school tackle football team now, and he's also playing for 14U Little League football team. So I'm the head coach at the middle school, and I'm the assistant head coach at the Little League. So it's like, you know, he just pulls you in. You know, I want to make sure that he gets the right techniques down, he gets the right coaching, and, you know, learn the game itself. Because even if he doesn't play, then he can do what you guys are doing, jumping on the radio, starting his own podcast, getting the sports broadcasting, anything else. But he will understand the game by the time he's done. And however everything else turns out, give him the opportunity. I can't, you know, I don't want to ever be in a situation where I say I didn't do everything that it took to try to get my son to that next level.
Anybody
that
tell you
so
you're
cool.
wrong? You give some advice, anybody see you know you're wrong? Anybody tell you that? That would be funny.
No, you know, not yet. Not yet. I know I'm not right with everything, but I'm definitely not wrong. I might have called a wrong play every now and then, but I'm definitely not wrong.
That sounds like such a cool experience. Such a cool experience for you, Dwayne. What position is he playing?
He's playing receiver, cornerback, well, mostly cornerback right now. And then on the middle school team, he's going to play everything. He's at U school, so they need help.
Does he have a grasp for the greatness that was his father? Like, do you have any old videotapes and stuff you show him?
That he's watching?
Does he have a grasp for the greatness that his father was? Do you show him any old tapes or anything?
Yeah, I think he's seen a few. He goes on YouTube and Google, and then a lot of his friends always, you know, bringing videos to him and saying, "This is your dad. This is your dad." So he gets excited about that. But he's coming along, man. He's doing well. Every game he seems to be getting an interception. So that's good. That's good. And he's just about 5 or 10 pounds heavier than me at 13 years old when I was 13.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's good. this kid's going to be a player.
Yeah, he's coming along, man. Just keep an eye out for the next couple of years.
We are. We're going to be talking about him in a few years, right, Azubi?
Yeah, get the story right going.
All right, guys. Well, yeah,
thank you. My footsteps, so it'll be all right.
Yeah, we trust you, buddy.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Blaine and Bruce, for coming by tonight. Really appreciate the feedback. Maybe we'll do it again, Dwayne, before the season's over. We'll see how this defense comes together. It's going to be exciting to watch one way or the other, I think.
All right, man. It's my pleasure being on.
All right, guys.
Thanks again. And thank you, of course, to Sicilian Oven for sponsoring that segment. All right, we have a wide open board, okay? So now is the moment. If you want to get on the show tonight, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. Let's consider that a last call for phone calls for tonight. In the meantime, Azubi and myself are going to dive into some of the questions that were posted on the message boards at canesport.com for tonight's show. We always make that request every week for guys to post some of the topics and questions that they would like to hear. Cooks 002, Azubi, would like for us to talk a little bit about the latest on conference realignment as it pertains to Miami. And I think right now the latest is the ACC is very strongly looking like it is going to add Stanford, Cal, and SMU. I like it. I think it adds a little bit of geographical change to the conference, takes them, the ACC, more in the direction of the super conference format that we're seeing evolve with the Big Ten and the SEC, and the Big 12 is also trying to keep up there. And I think you want 4 legitimate, really, really good conferences in college football, and I think it's important that the ACC hold together and stay that way. As it pertains to Miami, I don't think Miami is looking to leave the ACC right now. I have not heard anything along the way. I'm not saying that I'm privy to every single conversation that might be taking place. I think it makes sense for Miami to stay in the ACC and continue to help the ACC get better. And I think if you're adding a Stanford, that's a decent, you know, Stanford was once a pretty good football program, and I think they can get back to being a pretty good football program. Cal, you know, has been hit or miss over the years, but it's, you know, obviously a state university, and high school football is really good out there. And with the Pac breaking up and it's looking like it's not going to exist in any form, I think that's an opening for some of these schools to recruit better. I think Stanford with a national type schedule, getting Notre Dame in the equation, playing ACC teams, can benefit by joining the ACC. So the ultimate goal to me for the ACC is to get Notre Dame. May or may not be reality. I mean, it's going to take the NBC probably and the other television networks to back off doing a one-off deal with Notre Dame. And I saw they just had a record audience for their season opener against Navy from Ireland over the weekend. So I don't know that NBC is going to be looking to make that change anytime soon, unfortunately. But that's the ultimate prize for the ACC. But everybody can't go play in the SEC. Everybody can't go play in the Big Ten. So there have to be other conferences. And I think an ACC that is the number 3 or number 4 conference is right now probably the best place for Miami to stay home. Azubi, any additional thoughts?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say I might be young, but, you know, with college football, I'm an old school guy. And just sad seeing the Pac-12 kind of disappear in the thin air. But obviously, you know, as time goes on, you have to adjust and adapt with how things are going in college football. But really excited to see, you know, the ACC bringing some West Coast schools, and obviously SMU in Dallas, a big brand, a big city, so that'll be helpful for the ACC. It'll be cool to see, you know, if Rhett Lashley's still the head coach by the time they get there, him coming back to Miami and Miami playing against, you know, his old school and a bunch of other things. But
You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how that all works out with realignment. And I'm really, you know, kind of just going to be interested to see how the timing works. Obviously, you know, Miami and California aren't the closest states in America and the time difference. So I'm going to be happy to have those, you know, 9 p.m. whatever games or whatever it's going to be like. But a lot of new things to look forward to, and I feel like everything's going to be all right. I know a lot of people are flustered and, you know, thinking, hey, you know, why aren't we trying to leave and go to the SEC or a big thing? I don't feel like that's necessary for Miami. I feel like the ACC is going to do well on its own, bringing in other schools. Like you mentioned, Stanford has been good in the past. Cal is a big state university and a huge state. And like I said, SMU, Dallas, they're on the come up. They have a young coach that, you know, came from Miami. So a lot of positive things to look forward to.
All right, MIA 6 Kane wants us to talk about the recruiting outcome if Miami wins 10-plus games this year. Azubi, I think it would be huge. I think it would reopen up some of these recruitments that have gone the other way. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it would be more than huge. It would be tremendous. Like, I don't even know what word to describe it. I feel like Miami wins 10 games. That means they're winning either a game against Clemson, Florida State, UNC, or Texas A&M, at least two of those games. So that's huge in itself. So I feel like you mentioned, if Miami wins 10 games come December, don't be surprised if we start seeing these little secret visitors getting on campus, because I can name 3 or 4 guys, you know, off the top of my head, Ellis Robinson, Jeremiah Smith, you know, the Colin Simmons of the world, that Miami was right in it until the end. And I feel like with Ellis and Jeremiah, the biggest thing they said, they want to see Miami improve on the field. And 10 wins, that's doubling what you had last year. That's beating quality guys. That's you're playing in a good bowl game. That's a top 25 finish. That's all these things these guys are looking for. So I feel like 10 wins for Miami on the recruiting show will work wonders and make Mario Cristobal's job a lot easier. We're going to start seeing a little bit more of those loafer memes that we saw, you know, in December last year. Hopefully that'll help Miami get another top 10 class. And like I said early in the show, just continuing that upward trajectory that Mario Cristobal wants to have in Coral Gables. But I feel like 10 wins is the magic, not the magic number, the perfect number for Miami this year if they want to continue to build what they did with that top 10 class last year.
And, you know, I mean, let's be honest. People talk about wanting Miami to be back. For Miami to be back, you got to land these players. It's like those are the type of players you got to be able to get. So, you know, we can go on and on and on the way we are now, and it's better than it's been, and Mario's recruiting great and all that. But if you're going to put together a team that's going to compete with Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia in the playoff at the end of the season that's going to be coming up, the expanded playoff, and you're going to get in it and be competitive in it, you got to get some of those elite type players and have more of them than what Miami has right now. Miami does not have a lot of elite football players at the moment. That's just a fact. So that's got to change. And, you know, you see some of these young freshmen coming in that have maybe that kind of potential as they get into the, you know, second, third, in some cases, fourth year of their careers in college. But you got to start stacking a lot more of them. So, that type of season would be great. Raihan wants to play the blame game, Azubi. He wants to know who is to blame for the defensive tackle disappointments over the last few weeks in recruiting. A lot of people are pointing at defensive line coach Joe Salavea. Azubi, do you think, is that fair?
No, I don't think that's fair. I feel like Joe has done enough on the recruiting trail where he's gotten Miami in these races. He's gotten Miami in the door with a lot of these guys. But at the end of the day, like I said, 5-7 is hard to, you know, sell to these guys. And obviously I know we lost David Stone to Oklahoma. They went 6-6 last year. But before that, Oklahoma was a consistent 10-11-1 program. They've done, you know, their due diligence in the last few years. But I feel like you can't point one finger. I feel like it's collectively just a handful of things. Each guy has their own situations. David Stone's coming from Oklahoma. He's staying in Oklahoma. Colin Simmons is, you know, from Texas. He's staying in Texas. Justin Scott's, you know, parents kind of had a piece of that, you know, him going to Ohio State, not wanting to go to Miami. So I don't think there's one guy you can say, hey, this is the reason why we're not landing these guys. I feel like it's a collective thing. It's a little bit, you know, here and there with each guy, but I don't feel like it's over with a lot of these guys either. I feel like Mario Cristobal is going to work to the end, to National Signing Day. Like all these kids always say, Miami's telling me they're not going to stop recruiting me until the pen hits the paper, and I 100% believe that. And I feel like by the end of the cycle, one of these big guys may flip back Miami's way. I'm not going to make any promises, or this isn't me saying, oh, this is a scoop that I heard. I just feel like from watching Miami last year on the recruiting trail the first year, the history of Mario Cristobal being an aggressive recruiter, I don't feel like any of these races are completely out the window. I do feel like Miami's going to land that marquee or a marquee guy, not saying just along the defensive line, but a big five-star prospect that a lot of guys maybe think Miami out of the picture of. I think Miami's going to, you know, make something shake on the recruiting trail, but I wouldn't say there's one guy to blame with not landing these defensive line prospects, no.
Motley Cain, like a lot of people, was kind of trying to read some tea leaves and watching David Stone's commitment to Oklahoma over the weekend. You couldn't help but notice, I don't know if it was a sir or some family member that was holding a Miami sign back in the background there as he picked Oklahoma. Other people thought they were looking at family members that looked shocked, that weren't so happy with David Stone picking Oklahoma. I'm not sure if any of that is, you know, if that was really true. I watched it over a few times, and I was really looking closely at the faces of mom and dad, and I was like, you know, do they look upset? Like, I didn't really walk away with the same impression. But Azubi, do you think David Stone can be one of those guys that maybe is alive in December?
Yeah, 100%. I think David Stone is one of the guys Miami's not going to give up on. I mean, David Stone said it himself, I think, in one of the interviews, up until 3 o'clock that day, you know, Miami was the team he wanted to go to, and then he got the call from Oklahoma's defensive line coach, and that kind of, you know, made some things change in his mind, and he also meet, you know, Oklahoma when it came down to it. But I feel like, I mean, earlier this cycle, Miami lost, you know, Elias Rudolph to Michigan, and they kept their name in that race. They kept their foot in the door, and then ultimately it paid off. Last cycle, we saw Miami flip a handful of guys that were committed to other, you know, Power 5 programs. Miami flipped a guy from Oklahoma last year, Caleb Spencer. Miami flipped a guy from Michigan, Collins Ashmapong, you know, a few weeks, you know, after their college football playoff appearance. So Miami's not going to give up on any of these blue-chip five-star guys. And I feel like if there's one guy that I would say keep an eye on and just watch closely, Miami can, you know, put show some good product on the field and continue to recruit him and continue to do what they do, because his family loves Miami. So I feel like Miami can show themselves on the field that, hey, we're going in the right direction on the field. I feel like David Stone is a guy to keep an eye on until National Signing Day.
Okay, once again, we're in a last call for callers tonight, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You need to hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Azubi Cooks 002 is asking again, that he says he's been hearing the typical training camp banter, which leads the fan base to believe that the team is going to go undefeated. There's no question training camps breed a lot of excitement and positive feelings. He wants to know where the warts are in this team. He's thinking run defense. I think that's fair. He's thinking cornerback play. I think that could be fair. I mean, they've got a lot of bodies there. We have not seen you know, the Brown brothers in action yet. We have not seen Richards, the transfer in action yet. He played a lot of football at Vanderbilt in the SEC. Your thoughts? I mean, run defense, cornerback, anywhere else that you see warts, Azubi?
Yeah, no, I think he hit the nail on the head with that one. Obviously, you know, we just had the chance to speak with Lance Gidry for the coaches media day, and I wouldn't say this was a concern of mine, but him saying, hey, we don't know who our guys at cornerback are. We're going to rotate everyone until, you know, someone proves themselves. And kind of him here saying the same thing about a linebacker, obviously two key positions on the defensive side of the ball that they don't know who their guys are, that they're still trying to figure out. I don't know whether to take that as a bad thing that, hey, no one stepped up or, you know, stolen that spot and said, hey, this is my spot. Or is it these guys are all competing at a very high level and we just don't know who to put out there. But I would say those two position groups are a little bit concerning for me. Then obviously inside the trenches, in the middle of that defense. Personally, I do think that Leonard Taylor and Branson Dean are going to be able to solidify that defense and kind of be a power and speed type of guy, with Leonard Taylor being the power guy and Branson being the smaller speed guy. But until I see that, until, you know, they put it all together, until Leonard Taylor, you know, doesn't take off plays like he said he does, or until we see Branson Dean against, you know, SEC offensive line like Texas A&M, where there's big guys, or even the first game with Miami of Ohio, just
you know, I just want to see that defensive tackle position get solidified, and we know who the guys are going to be there. But I feel like just kind of those three groups a little bit, and then obviously I would say wide receiver. Last year we all know, you know, that was a position group that had a lot of question marks around it, dealing with injuries. But I feel like they're taking the step in the right direction with Kobe Young and Jacoby George and Xavier Chevrolet, obviously. But those, you know, position groups that I touched on, I feel like I have a couple question marks, but I feel like we'll find out, you know, by week two, Texas A&M, you know, who the guys are at those positions. So I feel like those will be answered relatively soon.
Okay, Waffle Fries wants to know about Chase Smith and Robert Stafford. Is Chase Smith 100%? We don't really know if 100% would be the right number there, but, you know, he has returned to practice. We'll see. You know, he's a guy that hasn't really contributed much since he arrived at Miami. I'm not counting on a whole lot there, but we'll see what happens. If he could just help on special teams a little bit, that would be great. Robert Stafford is a young freshman. He's doing very, very well. I don't know that it's reality for him to get a lot of playing time early here this year, but he should continue to develop into a quality corner. Maybe we'll see a little bit of him on special teams. Jay Collette wants to know our thoughts about Mario as a game day coach. Has he improved since coaching at FIU? My God, I hope so. Where can he grow? I don't know about this one, Azubi. I mean, people like to comment on this a lot. They like to knock Mario, say he's not a good game day coach. He doesn't manage clocks well, things like that. I'm not sure how fair that is. I can't think of too many football games with Mario as a head coach where you're sitting there saying, man, the head coach really screwed up. He cost them a game. I mean, he won a couple Pac-12 titles when he was out at Oregon. He almost won a third. You know, FIU was FIU. That was a real long time ago. I wouldn't even comment on that. I didn't feel Miami lost any games last year because of Mario Cristobal. So, Zuby, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I think that's a bad rap that they give coach.
Yeah, I feel like you're not a Power 5 head coach at multiple organizations. You won a Rose Bowl. You've gone up to Ohio State and given them, like, their first home loss in, I think, a couple years. I don't think you're a bad game day coach and you're able to do all of that stuff. I just, you know, think that's probably, like, a running joke with the fans. Obviously, no coach is going to coach every single game to perfection and make every single fan happy with the calls he makes or decisions he does. But I feel like that's kind of just, like, a running joke and things like that. But, hey, I mean, fans say it. I mean, yeah, that's kind of my two cents about it. I feel like I said, I feel like you're not a Power 5 coach in multiple organizations. If done what you've done, one conference championship, if you're not a good game day coach. So that's just my two cents on that.
Gabriel T. wants us to elaborate on the obvious culture changes other than 42 new players. I'll tell you, Gabriel, I mean, I think when you bring in 42 new guys, it's hard to change a culture. I mean, you got 42 new faces in the locker room. You don't just snap a finger and change culture, but you know, you can set the tone for a better culture. And I think that the way you do that is you weed out the guys that are anti-culture players on your team. And I think they've done a great job of that. You know, the kids that, you know, maybe were smoking a little too much, that were magnets for that type of activity when the players were not engaged in football activities. And I think that was contributing a lot to some of the issues that they were having culture-wise in the program. I think some of those kids were moved out in the off season, and it seems to me, and you know, I could be looking at it through orange and green colored glasses, but it just seems like a much more focused program. I think some leaders are emerging on both sides of the ball. And it just seems to me like a program where you don't see kids getting in trouble, just a greater focus on getting better as a football team. You have any thoughts on that, Azubi?
Yeah, I feel like the second year around, I feel like guys are just more level-headed and understand, you know, hey, last year wasn't our year. This year is our year to prove something. And I feel like that's a widespread mindset throughout the program. You see a perfect example of that today with Cam Kitchens. Obviously, we saw the Miami of Ohio quarterback kind of making a joke about saying we're the real Miami and things like that. And one of the reporters asked Cam Kitchens today, he's like, hey, is that any, you know, motivation? Is that going to be, you know, something that sparks you guys? He says, we don't need any more motivation. We know what we need to do, and that's what we're going to do. So I feel like just hearing that from their captain
in their leader, some guy that they look up to, some guy that, you know, took that next step as a sophomore coming in, you know, last year and proving his worth, is something that the rest of the team, I feel like, has kind of picked up on. And I just get that same vibe from just talking to the players and seeing them, you know, in practice, out of practice. I feel like the team is a very level-headed team. They know what they need to do, and they're focused on doing that and kind of canceling the outside noise.
PT Guy 86 wants to know if the Hurricanes can stay away from the injury bug. Do we think that they can have a double-digit win total this year? I'm going to say I think double digits might be a shade ambitious. I've said that the bar is 8. I think if they could get to 9, you have to look at that as a productive season moving forward. That would mean winning at least one game that people don't think that they're going to win. Azubi, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I do feel like, a lot of people say I'm a little optimistic or I'm always, you know, very positive, but I do feel like if Miami stays healthy, all the guys, you know, do what they're supposed to do, you know, 10 wins isn't out of the picture and possible because, you know, coming into last year, everyone, you know, thought Miami was going to be a contender in the ACC and all this and all that, and then boom, injury starts happening. You know, Miami goes 5-7. No one really expected that. So my thing is, you know, why can't Miami win 10 games this year? What's stopping them from doing that? If they stay healthy, they have the guys, they have, you know, the elite-level quarterback that you need to win. They have a good offensive line or that they think is going to be a good offensive line. Obviously, defense isn't where people think or want it to be right now, but I feel like over the season, that'll come along too. So, you know, stay healthy, do your job. I feel like 10 wins isn't out of the extraordinary. I predicted 9-3. If everyone stays healthy, Miami does their job. I won't be surprised at the end of the year if Miami, you know, somehow wins double-digit games.
All right, Azubi. Well, you had a heck of a first night on Kane Sport Live. Great job. Hope you enjoyed the banter back and forth with everybody. And we've got some great callers that are kind of regulars on this show. Hopefully next week we'll get into more first-time callers as the season cranks up and people get into it a little bit. I want to thank the voice of Sam Bruce Warner and Dwayne Starks for being part of the show tonight. I want to thank Sicilian Oven for sponsoring tonight's show. Make sure you check out one of their 8 locations throughout South Florida in Aventura Plantation, Boca Raton, Coral Springs, Fort Lauderdale, Lighthouse Point, Delray Beach, and Wellington. You will not be sorry. The food there is phenomenal. And I'm told they're even going to open up another ninth location in the Cooper City area in Broward County here before the end of the year in 2023. So for Azubi, I'm Gary, and for our whole Kane Sport team, thank you so much for being part of Kane Sport Live tonight. We will see everybody at the stadium on Friday night, 7 o'clock kickoff from Miami of Ohio, and we will be back here next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock for a new Kane Sport Live. Have a great night, everybody.